Session number 15433.
Peter McAleese, side 8. Okay, can we just go over that? You're in this truck going to the town of San Salvador. San Salvador, yeah. To Desire.
No, I flew down to San Antonio, right. That Desire.
Yeah.
And I had a look at the...
Right, and then it was this chap. Aye. What was his name again?
Brummy Barker said to me, have you ever thought of killing Callan? I says, you know, why are you speaking like this? Because he's thinking of killing you. Well, fortunately, or probably unfortunately, or fortunately for me, I was no longer with him. Can you see that? We were down there on our own. Yeah. So he says, he's had you shipped down here. And you know, you get all the guys saying that, you know, different reports reports to tabloid newspapers saying I had an argument. There was never an argument with me and Callan. There was an argument with me and Mike Wainwright. I got down there and I took one look at the situation. It was insanity. Mm. I mean, there was soldiers looting, pillaging the town. And, you know, Holden Roberto came down and joined me and said, this man is going to be responsible for the defence of the town.
What was the situation down there? You've got the FNLA.
Yeah, the FNLA fighting with the MPLA. The MPLA were backed by the Cubans and the Russians.
Yeah.
And the FNLA was... I think the West was making a token gesture at
right.
arming them.
And they were coming from the north.
Yeah.
Whereas, later on,
yeah.
or whatever, yeah. UNITA was coming from the south, backed by
yeah.
the South Africans
yeah.
and others.
Yeah. So, you know, in actual fact, the area controlled by the MPLA was the central plain. Can
yeah.
you see that? That's central part of Angola.
And how much was the terribly, how much of the north was occupied by...
Well,
the FNLA.
By the time I first got in contact with Banks, to the time I arrived out there, they'd lost miles and miles of territory.
Right. So
and
it was quite
only
a narrow
the top, the narrow from
corner.
Yeah.
Edge.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
yeah.
these are my terms.
Yeah.
And
as I say, there were by that time the Cubans were between a place called Makela and Damba. Can you see that?
Okay.
They were on the road there.
How far were they away from your front line, and they're just knocking?
No, San Salvador. To get to Makela, you had to drive about 60. I can't remember the exact.
Okay.
It was a long way to get to Makela.
Right.
And his front line was there, but I went to San Antonio de Zaire.
Right. So.
Right. So I looked at the area, and I drove into the recce. I had a look at all the various troops, and the state they were in, the morale was in, the morale of the people. And I noticed there was a military hospital and a civilian hospital with casualties from both sides in it. So the first thing I did was get the hospital totally cleaned up, you know, because
mm.
there were people dying in there through lack of hygiene.
Mm. Were your orders swiftly carried out?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Really? And we were fairly ruthless with it.
In what way?
If they weren't carried out, we just picked the people up, a big... MPs are their own guys. Can you see that? Not us.
Yeah.
They'd do the business on them, you know. Just hit them a whack and get them back to camp.
What was the attitude of the MPLA soldiers at that time? I didn't mean the FNLA soldiers.
They were fairly surly and, you know, and discipline was breaking down and that they were no longer victorious. Can you see that?
Yeah.
And everybody was trying to make plans for escapes and,
yeah.
and whatnot. You know, you get the guy walking along the road and he'd have his civilian clothes under his uniform
yeah.
in case something started, just throw the whole lot off.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were still getting bits and pieces of
yeah.
food. So what I did is I started doing reconnaissance. Oh. Yeah.
What, have they got enough weapons?
Oh, yeah, everybody had a weapon, yeah.
The local, have they got support weapons and tanks?
They had 75mm recoilless rifles, they had some 106s. Some mortars and some 12.7 machine guns.
Mm. And how
really
did
heavy.
That compare to the MPLA?
Well, the MPLA had armour, you know, which was the added extra.
Yeah.
You were
doing the recce.
Yeah, I'm doing the recce and I found a load of food that had been salted away. Big, they belonged to the oil company, massive food stores.
Uh-huh.
So I says, right. I got the guy in charge of the store and I says, I want this food, because what happened is everybody was hanging on to things. And if the MPLA came, even weapons, piles of weapons, oh, I'll give them to the MPLA and that means I'm on sides. I could read the game. And the same with this food. There was warehouses upon warehouses of food, yet there was people starving. So what I did is I got all the food, I had it moved into the barracks, and I got the whole army together. I had probably about 900 men. And I said, right, I'm going to start feeding you and you will be fed properly. If anybody is caught touching civilians or taking food off civilians, severe retribution shall be reaped. You know, because the one trawler that used to go out and bring fish in, and the army would just walk in, slap the civilians about and take the food off them. So I got the mayor of the town, I said, look, the army has now been fed. And by that time, I'd found a bakery, opened the bakery and got some flour and started baking bread for the civilians so I could get bread out as well. So I said, if anything happens, please come and see me.
Did they understand English easily?
No, I always had an interpreter with me.
What was the mayor and the attitude to you?
Oh, he was just glad because he lost control. Can you see that? Right. And what it did is it put him back in the seats again. Can you see that? You know.
Who did you have from your local lot, your overseas lot?
I had eight guys, and a chap called Barker from the parachute regiment, a guy called John Tildley from the Marines, a chap, Mick Johnson from the Foreign Legion, Mick Rennie from the parachute regiment, a guy from the PT Corps, Col McKenzie, and there was one more.
And were they following you around, or did you leave them in charge?
No,
did you give them separate responsibilities?
Yes, I did. Yeah. What I did is I made four companies, and I put one of them in charge of each company.
Right.
You know, and they were there in an advisory capacity, you know, saying to the officers, get this done, get that done, you know.
Who was delegated to deal with the bakery, the hospital, etc.?
I went around, and I had a guy called Lima, who was an ex-policeman. And he actually did the interpreting for me.
Right.
And I made sure that he got round and reported back to me to let me know how, you know, for example, I got the electricity back on in the town so as we could get electricity moving again.
What was the problem with the oil?
It was diesel oil, yet there was tons of it lying up at the oil company. It just wasn't getting shipped in.
So you basically got, was the size of the population of this town?
Oh, the civilian population was probably in the region of 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I managed to get the system ticking over.
Right.
I mean, the bakery was just turning out bread 24 hours a day.
Right.
Yeah.
So things, you got it all organised.
Yes, I did, aye.
And
the guys I had with me worked awful hard, you know.
Uh-huh.
If I wanted to see, I'd send over to Bromley Barker, say, get 20 guys over here, I want something done. It would be done straight away, you know, it's just, you know, like...
So, okay, what was the reaction of the locals when everything started working again?
I think there was a sense of hope there,
uh-huh.
You know, and that the thought things were coming right.
Okay. How far away were you from Callan at this time?
Oh, an hour's flight.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, 400 miles, possibly.
What I actually done was, of the food I got there, because I've been fairly badly fed over at San Salvador, I loaded a Fork of Friendship up with food and sent some food across to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How far away were you from the fighting?
60 kilometres.
Right.
Now, because what happened is they'd come up and turned off like that. Can you see that?
Mm.
Like, we were right on the tip of the land there, and that's Angola there.
Right.
They'd swung in towards a place called Tomboko. They'd peeled off a place called Ambrosette.
Okay.
Head across to Tomboko.
Mm.
And what I thought is they were going to come through Tomboko and come along the top
right.
road. In actual fact, they stopped here and another column came up and came towards here.
Right. Was the fighting nearer you or nearer Callan?
No, because Callan was tackling a separate front on his own.
Okay.
He was up at Makela.
Okay.
And in fairness to him, he was taking the fight to them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terribly misguided and, you know, not an awful lot of thought put into it. But he was having a go.
Was the enemy in between you and Callan?
Yeah, yeah.
So you could go around it, but you'd have to go further north and back down again.
Yeah.
Right. How long had you been here by now in Angola?
Just about a month.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, please
take out
the story. Yeah.
Right. What happened then was, I started whipping the army into shape. You know, I took, if I seen a guy with a G3, you know, I'd say, right, I want all the G3s and I want all the Kalashnikovs in, and I'd give each company the same type of weapon. Yeah, can you see that? Because right. there was everybody was carrying a different weapon. Yeah. So I standardised all the weapons that each company had, and then I made an outer perimeter with very in depth, you know, like, you know, they'd have to come through various companies, and I tried to get as much depth as I could into it, and get the machine guns, the heavy machine guns and the mortars. And then something intervened, Holden Roberto turned up, and he opened his case and then went, there's your guy's wages. I says, what is this man up to? He paid us straight away. And he says, Callan has gone crazy. Oh, no, stop. Before that, I had all these white petrol company trucks. And what I did is, I was trying to camouflage them. Mm-hmm. So I got this red lead paint from the petrol company. There was millions of stores there.
Yeah.
And what I did is I painted them red and just, you know, threw handfuls of dust over the paint.
Yeah.
And I got myself
white.
And an aircraft came in. So I went out to the airport to see what it was. It was a two-engine aircraft, Cessna. A couple of guys says, you know, we're so-and-so. I says, oh, that's interesting. And I says, well, I had a pilot in about 4 or 5 days before that. And what I did is I said, I'd written some proposals and recommendations. You know, I wrote down the situations I saw it. In the San Antonio area, and I made in recommendations and proposals. I put under it that, you know, somebody should be out there with some staff training and coordinate three groups, which was my group, Callan's group, and the Portuguese.
Right.
And I said, you know, somebody that can get some direction at the war, because all we're doing is actually pinpricking at the moment.
Mm.
And the other thing is I mentioned that, you know, that I didn't have a great deal available to tackle a tank threat.
Mm.
And you know, what could it do for me? And the other thing I put was all the weapons that was available in the base, the ammunition states, how long we could last for petrol states, you know, ration states, a whole lot, and to see what was capable of doing. So I'd given it to this Portuguese pilot. I says, I know you're working for the CIA. I says, get this to them. And the next, about 3 or 4 days later, a plane flew in and two Americans came to see me.
Right.
And they said, who wrote this? I said, me.
What, appearance? Americans? What are they?
Open neck shirts, trousers outside, grossly overweight, you know, and...
Sunglasses.
Sunglasses, yeah, Ray-Bans. So we actually took them down to the house and they said, right... And they started taking this report I'd written apart. And I says, you know, if we could have only had this months ago, we could have got this into Congress. Because all they're doing is pouring weapons, ammunition and arms into here. And there's nothing going back. They can't see what's been done with it. And now at least we can see where it's going.
Mm.
And we can justify this. So they started talking to me. And I think they thought I was way beyond the level of training or rank that I'd held in the army. And, you know, I was forced to do this. It wasn't like it was a natural thing for me to do.
Mm. How did you get on with them?
Extremely well.
Right. Do you speak in the same language?
Oh, yeah. I told them I'd been in America and whatnot, and that went a long way. I said I'd been with, oh, yeah, Special Forces. So, you know, we struck up a fair bit of rapport.
Good. Yeah.
The next thing we did was they went away. And they spoke to me about, what do you feel about the other groups? I says, well, the Portuguese are cracking. You know, they're trying to get out there at Tomboco.
Can I just ask you?
Yeah.
You've got, roughly speaking, you've got top left is you.
Yeah, in the middle is the Portuguese.
And top right, and to the right is right. Is Callan.
It's Callan, yeah.
Okay.
He's in the northeast of the country.
Right.
Portuguese are north central, I'm northwest.
And were you actually physically blocked off from the Portuguese and the Portuguese from Callan?
Well, you know, there was one road.
All right.
That actually ran along the side of the Zaire River, which was a bad, bad road.
Okay.
That you could get through.
So
on.
By yeah. skimming the border, you
yeah,
could,
yeah, yeah.
And who was actually overall in control?
No one.
All right. Okay.
This is what I'd recommended to the Americans, that they get somebody right. out there. So, okay, so
then you're talking with the Americans.
Yeah.
And
so, you know, we're talking military stuff, and they're going, yeah. we're going to come back to you. And I says, you know, there's one thing you should know, I don't think things... There was queer reports getting filtered back to me. Mm. I'd managed to pick up some radio traffic from San Antonio de Zaire, San Salvador. Mm. And a guy called Fuzz Huzzy says, look, everything's not right here. He said, I don't want to elaborate on it. And I could sense that Callan had been up to something. So I spoke to these guys. I says, you might not like, you know, what's going on with the other groups, you know. You know, because I had a fairly happy group. And, you know, I've never been into discipline by fear. It's never been one of my things. So I just left it at that. Next thing, they fly out. Next day, within 2 days, Holden Roberto was in to see me. Paid me straight away. Says, Callan has gone crazy. He's killing all the civilians at Makela. Pardon me. And he is, and I think he may have killed your cousin. This is my cousin. She says, I want you to go up and take over the whole thing because the man has gone mad. You know, and I sat there and, you know, my stomach started twinging a wee bit.
Why? Yeah. Because you're shocked from what had happened, or
no? It was nothing to do with responsibility. Mm. If they'd have given the job to me in the first place and established it, but what he wanted me to do was to dethrone a man and put myself in charge. Mm. Can you see that? And you know that what he did was make his problem that he'd created mine.
Yeah.
I wasn't. Probably if I'd have been with Callan much longer, I may have clashed him and I could have finished up dead. I don't know. He says to me, I want you to come with me. I says, right, you must hold on. So I took Brummy Barker out. I says, Brum, I'm going to have to leave you in charge. I says, now, I took him up to a place called Corpus Christi. I says, Brum, I want you to take the reserve company. I want you to put 2 anti-tank guns in here, aiming down the road, sight them there, with the company protecting the 2 guns. You know, that's how it's done. I says, it must be done as soon as possible. I says, yeah. As soon as I was out, he went away hunting. And when he was away hunting, the Cubans broke through. But, you know, as I say, I was at Makela at the time. Mm-hmm. We tried to fly to Makela. We couldn't get in that night, and we finished up going to back into Kinshasa because there was a heavy storm at Makela. And I meet Nick Hall and I meet Mick Wainwright. This is the guy's going absolutely crazy. He's bumping guys off all over the place. He's killed 16 guys. So I says, yeah, okay. So I've got to fly in, and the next thing is, you know, these guys are all going to come in and help me to dethrone Callan. So we flew.
How many of you were?
There's 4 of us. 3, me, Mike Wainwright, and this guy called Tom Oates, an American, a policeman.
Mm. Had you worked with these guys before?
No, never.
Had you heard of them before?
No, never.
What opinion had you formed? Or you can form an opinion of people.
I looked at Tom Oates, I says, this guy's a bullshitter. And I looked at Mike Wainwright, and I could see that the guy was obviously shocked about, because he was a Callan man, can you see that?
Mm.
But, you know, I don't think he could take any more of it. He was, you know, I think it all turned a wee bit sick for him, too sick.
He was actually sort of
shocked.
Or shook up almost.
Yeah.
Right.
So we flew
so
in.
So who else was there? Was the third one, wasn't there?
There's myself, Tom Oates, and...
Wainwright,
and the third one was Nick Hall, He was an ex-para who'd been in jail for selling weapons. You know, and I say I had a funny group of men. Anyways, we're flying.
Did you actually feel you could rely on any of them?
No, no.
What plan had you formulated?
Well, I'd managed to get myself a second chance vest. You know, one of the
bulletproof vests, really.
And to be honest with you,
which was there weren't many of those around at that time. No.
I felt that I had to do it because I'd been put in a position to do it. Can you see it? It was not ego. It was just I was put in that position and I was going to follow it through.
So what did you... Had you actually told either of any of these guys what you were planning, how you were going to do it?
No, first of all, I was going to go up there and have a look at the situation and walk in and see it for what is it. By the same token, I knew that Callan wasn't going to take it lying down. So I said, how am I going to place? Anyway, I went up there and I seen a vehicle come out with a machine gun on it. And it was Callan's vehicle. So I arrived on the ground, and we could only see men on the vehicle. We couldn't see who they were. We landed, and I looked around, and the people who were supposed to be assisting me were taking cover in the bushes. You know, in actual fact,
You just landed.
We just landed. Yeah.
And they'd shot off.
I actually felt like Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. So a guy called.
What were you armed with then?
I was armed with an M2 carbine.
Only.
Yeah, I had a pistol.
Wow.
Sammy Coltman came across, and a guy called Shotgun Charlie.
Who was that?
Well, Sammy Coltman had been taking part in the massacre.
He'd actually shot people.
Aye.
This is when a number of Europeans were killed. Oh, yeah. A number of outsiders were shot. Yeah.
So I got them there and I looked around, and all these people that were coming with me hid in the bushes. So I just started talking to him. Sammy Copeland bent down to draw a map for me to explain the situation. I kicked his weapon away. I said, get your hands up in the air. There was a Portuguese guy on the machine gun. I said, get your hands off that machine gun, get off the truck now. And Shotgun Charlie looked at me and I slapped him, beat him with a rifle, just knocked him. I said, right, get up against there. And all of a sudden, the cavalry came out the bushes. Now, what you've got to understand here is it was insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was expected to go and restore the situation, but, you weren't dealing with a normal situation.
What had you got fixed in your mind you were now going to do?
Right. I says, where's Callan? I was told he was wounded and he was in the house. And what I was going to do was disarm him and ship him back. That was my original intention.
Mm-hmm.
And it says he's been captured. He's out in no man's land. We think he's been captured.
Right.
And it made the whole situation much easier, right?
That was actually the case, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. So I drove into Mackellar and I looked there. And I could see the guys looking at me and says, oh, here comes another hatchet man, And there were big black rings. It was sort of reminiscent of those First World War drawings, big rings around their eyes, You could see the morale was rock bottom. You could sense it.
And these are your guys?
These were Callan's men.
They're Callan's guys. How many did he actually shoot?
16.
16?
Aye.
And that was out of 30. He shot half of them or so.
Yeah. And again, it was all through bad briefings,
Well, why did he shoot them?
Everybody was playing. See what happened with Callan? He surrounded himself with all these henchmen, and they were all loving it, and everybody was going about sort of playing the roles of sergeant majors and officers and whatnot, but there was absolutely no depth of knowledge there.
No.
And, a briefing was, follow me, guys, and the order of march was the fastest truck, second fastest truck, third fastest truck. There was never any ground situation, mission execution, admin log, command and signals, there was never any of that.
Mm.
These guys were stuck out someday and out in a limb. They're in a strange country, and somebody points and says, "End that comes through that direction is the enemy."
Mm.
So these guys see a jeep coming along, open fire on it. They're totally jittery. There's nobody there who has actually served time in the country guiding these guys. Mm. They're just left there. So they open up, and somebody fired a lot at the truck. Anyway, it eventually all calmed down. There was nobody injured. And
that was the truck of Callan's with the machine gun on it.
No, it was a truck, just a truck.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And because they captured quite a few vehicles.
Okay.
They squared it all away, and the next thing was they drove them all back into Mackellar the next morning. And Callan, by this time, is like a raving maniac. No, I'm only pure hearsay from here. Uh-huh. So he says, right, he lines all the guys up, and the haranguing starts, you pieces of sheet. Everybody was always, it wasn't a shit, it was a sheet, huge dirty sheet, And he says, right, who fired the missile last night? This young kid put his hands up. He just walked around and blew his head off.
He was a Brit or something?
Yeah. And he's walking up and down with a pistol going, in Angola, you know, this is the law, this is what it's all about. It's not the British Army anymore. So anyway, he sees...
Why don't you think anybody just shot him in self-defence?
I don't
know. God knows.
I don't know. But, you know, the thing is he'd been out there a while, and he was a fairly cunning chap. Don't get this wrong. You know, the whole thing was dependent. And everywhere he went, he had this guy called Sergeant Arrow with a 50 calibre machine gun, or a 12.7, fall on him. Can you see that? Mm. He says, right, take the weapons off them. And take them away and shoot them. And the guys couldn't believe it. They thought he was going to dump us in the airport. I mean, we, you know, the British Army don't do things like that. So they took them away to a little hill and they said, get off the truck. And they executed them.
How old they?
There was Sammy Copeland, a guy called Mackenzie, and one other.
Who did the shooting?
Done the shooting, of course.
Who was the chap, Shotgun Charlie? Was
Shotgun Charlie wasn't there, no.
Who was the other chap at the airport that greeted you?
Sammy Copeland.
All right. And he'd done some of the shooting?
He'd done the massacre, yeah. He actually done the massacre.
What did they shoot them with? Were a large machine gun? Or?
It was a machine gun, FNs and an Uzi.
Right.
And...
16 people.
Yeah. Anyway, I got there, and I says, right, I want to find out what happened there. So I handcuffed up Sammy Copeland and this other guy.
All right, so you got to the headquarters there, the house.
The house, yeah.
So you'd gone round there. Aye. Copeland was there.
Yeah.
So and who else was there?
There was about... Shotgun Charlie was there. I handcuffed him. And none of Callan's other henchmen were there.
Right.
Right.
Did you know at that time that
Copeland had done the massacre?
Yeah.
I had an idea, yeah.
All right.
Because Mick Wainwright had told me in Kinshasa.
All right, okay.
So...
Where'd you got the handcuffs from?
This guy, Tom Oates, was an ex-policeman.
Yeah.
And, so we handcuffed him and...
What was his attitude then?
Oh, he was all gung-ho, you know, and we got to handle this properly, and that's his year.
Who were so, Oates?
Aye. So
but what was Copeland's attitude once he got...
He says, you know, what's this all about? And I says, you know, Sammy, you've overstepped the mark.
Could you describe Copeland to me? I mean,
Copeland was a stocky boy. Mm. All arms all covered in tattoos. And he was a good boy, Sammy Copeland. Something just went wrong. You know,
What age background?
He was about 26, 27. Mm.
And he was from?
The parachute regiment.
Right. Okay.
And I say they all got caught on this, and to sort of prove yourself to Callan, you had to kill somebody, you know.
Yeah.
And right, so what I did then is I says, it's my cousin about it. I says, yeah, he's in one of the outposts. I sent a truck out. I says, bring him in. I says, Tom, talk to these guys. Tell them, you know, you better read my credentials to them, you know. So, you know, I said, I'm going to go and find out about this massacre. So I left... Mike Wainwright with the prisoners. I drove out to see this massacre, and I couldn't believe it. You know, it's like the shape of a triangle, you know, where the sort of the original group had, and you can see where they ran away, and you can see where the last one had been shot.
They were still there?
They were still there, yeah.
I mean, they hadn't been buried or anything?
No.
Just in the
and there was one guy actually leaning over a bush like that, and his brains had been blown out the front of his head.
Yeah. Had they removed personal belongings from them, or...?
Yeah, they'd been robbed, yeah.
Who, by the blokes that did it?
Yeah.
Not the locals?
No. The locals were shit scared, they just kept out of the way.
Sure.
They
go, what about uniforms? They didn't take the
uniforms? No, the uniforms were still on.
Boots?
Still on. Anyway, I got back there, and by this time, Nick Hall, who is supposed to be holding Roberto's advisor, screaming, these men must be court-martialed, these men must be court-martialed.
Who's shouting this now?
Nick Hall.
Who's...
Holden Roberto's... He was his aide.
All right,
So I spoke to Holden Roberto. I says, what do we do? He says, okay, you know, something's got to happen here. So what we did is we got all the guys, because the people who were involved were there, and we ran a court-martial.
How many were left of the blokes that weren't shot who'd been there,
There was about 20-odd guys in the place.
So the four who'd done the shooting, three or four who'd done the shooting...
Two had run away.
Right.
Sammy Copeland was still there. Mm. You see that?
So, right. And, so you have the court-martial.
Yeah. And I ran it as best as I could see fit. And the name of the game was fairness, you know?
Yeah.
So, and the whole thing, it holds on, you know, so, and we brought all the witnesses in, and we tried to document it as much as we could. And the main thing is all I was thinking about is, you know, what the hell's going on here? It was insanity.
Mm.
And
what happened to your cousin?
He came and they said, so the guy settled down a bit, because they then knew who I was. And in actual fact, you know, I feel a bit guilty and a weakened.
Mm.
And allowed Nick Hall to seize the reins on this one. Can you see it?
Yeah.
And he's on about these men must be executed. So anyway, we spoke to Holden Roberto and said something's got to be done. He said, well, get on with it.
Mm. So you were what, 31 or something?
31, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was 32.
Okay.
I then spoke to Sammy Copeland. I'm not into this. I said, Sammy, we're going to shoot you.
Really?
And Sammy says, get on with it.
Really?
Aye.